Today's sermon is, I think, the fifth now in a long sermon series of seven about religion in America. Today, looking at the role of religion, the changing role for better and for worse in civil society, the use of sacred power in the secular world. So by way of beginning, I want to call to mind a worship service that we had in the fall, I think it was October, in which we invited the coming of age class, which are four of the smartest young women I have ever met, to share with us some of the activities that they used when they were trying to articulate their faith for themselves at this stage in life. And one of them was an activity that they called Continuum. And if you were here on that Sunday, you'll remember that on one wall they pasted a giant board that said agree. I think it was over here. And on another wall they pasted a giant board that said disagree. And the activity consisted of someone, I think me, reading a statement, and then all of us would align ourselves on the continuum based upon whether we agreed or disagreed with said statement. Now, these girls are quick, so they knew that when I said, my minister totally rocks, they were all to stand over here. When I said, I believe in God, there was a wide variety spanned across the entire stage, from all the way as far over there as one could get to all the way over here. But the really compelling answer came when the statement was, I believe religion does more harm than good in the world. And when we said that, I was surprised, bewildered, and quite lonely to find myself over here on the area of disagree. Almost all of our young women and almost all of our leaders were quite firmly over here. Religion does more harm than good in the world. There we stood. And as I said that Sunday, hey, I'm a minister, what do you expect of me? But it is an important question, and a vital one, and one that is not nearly so easy to answer as it might seem. In truth, even my answer is a little more conflicted than I showed that Sunday. There is, of course, a big part of me, perhaps the biggest part, that wants only to defend religion against its detractors and to remind us of the great social good done in the name of religion in these United States. But religion and its power for change in our lives and in the world is too important to oversimplify. It's too important to write off as all good or all evil, too important to dismiss instead of looking at closely. The work of using religion to shape culture is a high-stakes game. And coming down firmly unwavering on one side or the other of an imaginary boundary between the faithful and the faithless seems like an unnecessary oversimplification of a worthy question. After all, depending on who you ask, we ourselves are variously depicted as a proud voice of reason within the religious community, a bunch of do-gooders with varying beliefs or none at all who just like to hang out with each other, and a cult of wingnut liberals who have willingly turned their backs on the true God. It's all in the perspective, isn't it? Depending on who you ask and in what box they choose to put their understanding of religious faith, whether or not religion does more harm than good in the world is a complex question. We don't have to today defend ourselves to the world or even to one another. We don't even have to determine once and for all if in fact we are religious or not. And as always, it depends a great deal on our definitions of words like religion and faith. And we can hammer that out later, as we will hammer it out many times. For now, I want to ask a more important question, a question not about who is pro-religion and who is against it, a question about what it is we really want to shape the future of our country. The truth is that there are forces all of us want to emulate and encapsulate and take into the world with us. There are forces that we all want to bring into this nation's politics. And most of us, when we are being reasonable, are on some level, in terms of our politics, neither pro-religion nor anti-religion, neither wholly for the intrusion of religion into civil society or against it. We are for the intrusion of certain values into the management of a civil government. I, for one, am not for the intrusion of religion in civil society or against it. But I'm absolutely for the righteous and examined and thoughtful intrusion of values into American civil discourse. I'm for the intrusion of justice. I'm for the intrusion of conscience. I'm for the intrusion of challenge and equanimity and compassion and big-hearted disagreement. I'm for the intrusion of service to the least among us, opportunity for the greatest number, and the uplifting of the inherent value of every person at every strata of our society. In some cases, indeed many cases, those values are incubated in warm stained glass sanctuaries like this one, in religious communities. In other cases, indeed many, those values are crushed beneath the burden of orthodoxy, and the only thing that escapes the stained glass sanctuary is further partisanship and division honed to a fine point upon the grinding wheel of divine sanction. The question is then, how might religion serve as an incubator of values in a way that is truly more helpful than harmful? What is the ideal role of religion in civil society? What is the role of the church in the functioning of the state? There are several illustrations I'd like to use to point out some possible different answers to that question. Recently, a group of 58 clergy representing 25 houses of worship and at least 10 different interfaith associations drafted and signed a letter that was sent to Prince William County's elected officials. I was among those clergy, as was every single sister currently at the Benedictine Monastery on Linton Hall Road. Every one of them, 28 of our 59 signatures, were from those engaged women engaging their faith. As I said, I was with those clergy, and in that letter, we as people of faith stated our concern that the manner in which conversations about immigration have been held in Prince William County has alienated many people on both sides of the issues, causing dissension and division and creating what we termed an unwelcome spirit in our community. We did not take a stand on any piece of legislation. We did not advocate for any particular approach to addressing immigration, illegal or otherwise. What we did do was quote various scriptures, including Hebrew, Christian, and Muslim scriptures, all indicating that in community, we have an obligation to remain in conversation with one another when division has occurred. We asked our elected officials to be a part of an ongoing conversation about how to move forward from these divisive times together without scapegoating or name-calling on either side, without further division. And since we were approaching the issue not from a partisan perspective, we hoped and still hope that we might be helpful. The Washington Examiner and the Washington Post pick up on this story, and they call Corey Stewart, the chairman of the Board of County Supervisors, for comment on our letter and on our support and our offer of assistance in community dialogue. Corey Stewart responded by calling our group of 58 widely respected clergy persons illegitimate and misguided, saying, "We don't need them as an intermediary. They need to do what they do best, serve their congregants and attend to their denominations and not get involved in partisan politics. Now, leaving aside the point that I don't really believe we got involved in partisan politics by calling for community engagement, Corey Stewart's point characterizes one way that religion might interact in civil society, namely, to stay away from it entirely. Stewart's comments are not that unusual in their sentiments. They indicate that from his perspective, the proper place for a preacher is in the pulpit and the pulpit only, and that any civic engagement on the part of religious leaders or religious communities is illegitimate and meddlesome. He is not alone in that perception. But we Unitarian Universalists come from a long line of religious forebears who believe the exact opposite of what Mr. Stewart is saying. If there's one thing that defines us over and over again, it's the fact that we've always been meddlesome. The fact that we've always been engaged in the world around us, sometimes more than we should, sometimes to a degree that we chose to pull back, but we've always been in it. We've seldom chosen to stick to our pulpits and our pews. After all, it was a Universalist who began the American Red Cross, Universalists who first agitated against capital punishment and advocated for prison reform, and, by the way, first advocated for temperance, bringing about the prohibition of alcohol in these United States. It was Universalists who first advocated for... Now we get a hiss. It was Universalists who first advocated for public education in America, and Unitarians were among the loudest and proudest proponents of the freedom of all enslaved Africans in this country. Almost half of our sitting ministers marched with Dr. King in Selma, and it was our own denominational press that published the Pentagon Papers. Talk about religion in civil society. In recent years, we Unitarian Universalists have been active in issues of peace, environmental justice, the rights of gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender persons, and a host of other issues that you know are close to the hearts of many here. We are not shrinking violets in the civil society that surrounds us. In fact, there are times in some corners of our movement and on some Sundays in this pulpit that our agenda is as much a social justice agenda as it is a spiritual one. There are those who feel conflicted about that fact. Yet we are not at our best merely another nonprofit advocacy organization, as important as such organizations are. We are at our best a curious combination of advocates for social change and engaged practitioners of a particular kind of spiritual journey. We're not one or the other. We are, for better and for worse, both. Neither ignoring the world nor being wholly overwhelmed by it. According to the history of our tradition, therefore, religion can't be disengaged entirely from civil society, but neither can it be overtaken. What we do has ramifications both in the larger context in which we move and in the sacred recesses of our own hearts. Religion in the broadest sense has been a great many things during the course of this nation's history, but one point in our history as a nation illustrates a particular and powerful role for religion that I'm not sure if it will ever or even should ever play again. Namely, never before or since the civil rights movement have churches been so distinctly leveraged as the weight upon which the scales of justice finally tipped. In the South, from the early to mid-20th century, the simple truth is that black churches were just about the only distinctly African-American organizations around. They were the one place where African-Americans could gather and generate enough widespread support for change to make a real difference. And so it was not some secular agency that hosted the first gathering of people who supported Rosa Parks. It was at the Hold Street Baptist Church, where Martin Luther King first felt himself pushed toward that podium to speak the first great address of the civil rights movement, and the Montgomery bus boycott, and all of the movements of civil rights that started in its aftermath were distinctly and uniquely related to the actions of the African American church. The Southern Christian Leadership Conference that King headed was led largely by ministers, especially in its early days, and its rallying cries were the words of the Hebrew Exodus and the spirituals of the slaves. At its inception, nearly all the members of that other great civil rights advocacy group, SNCC, the Student Nonviolence Coordinating Committee, were products of African American churches. The civil rights movement had as its aim the transformation of civil society, no doubt about it. But it found its strength, it found its spirit, in the resources and numbers that came from the rich soil of the black church. There was no way to extract religion from issues of civil rights. It was the ground beneath the feet of the marchers in Selma, Alabama. And without the black church in the South being bold enough to engage the nation, come what may, to interfere and meddle and be as brave as possible about it, there would not have been a civil rights movement as we know it. And so we have three options on the table for how religion might engage civil society: ignore it, advocate for change within it, and serve as the institutional backbone that makes it possible. Of course, there is at least one more way, perhaps the most problematic of all, that religion can engage civil society, and that is to be its watchdog, to maintain its status quo. The institution by which society maintains and imposes its norms, even when those norms are morally dubious. Frederick Douglass used to say that when he was sold from one slave owner to another, he would pray not to be sold to a religious slave owner. Because there was, he said, a certain intensity to the evil, because they could blame it on God's mandate to oppress others. So religion became a power that reinforced the evil. Rather than giving a backbone to its resistance, it gave a backbone to the socially imposed norms of injustice. It wasn't the first time nor the last. Elizabeth Cady Stanton said that the Bible and the church have been the greatest stumbling blocks on the way to women's emancipation. It stood in the way. It blocked the path to change. Religion can ignore the world. It can advocate for change within it. It can be the engine that causes change, or it can be the barrier upon which the waves of social change break and dissolve. It has been all of these. It continues to be all of these. And the question of whether religion does more harm than good is still an open one. I will concede that it is not simple. What I will not concede is the popular notion that religion is an easily dismissed, superstitious fallacy that holds the world back from being all it could be if everyone just stopped believing. It's not that simple, because religion has one more thing going for it at its best. Religion isn't just an advocacy organization or a tool for stopping change or a way to control people's thinking. At its best, religion serves as an impetus for personal transformation and a call to conscience for each individual. At their best, churches and synagogues and temples are places where we each come to have our conscience sharpened, our highest hopes recognized, and our sense of duty prodded so that we can go out and engage the world as individuals because we came to church on Sunday and heard something that called us to action. At its best, the church is a confederation of individuals who are themselves independently acting in the world around them, perhaps not all on the same issues, perhaps not all even agreeing with each other on what to act on and how, but coming to one place at a certain time each week to be reminded of how they personally might be called to act. Church should be a place that changes us, that changes you. It certainly changes me. Church, this one in particular, calls me out all the time on my oversimplifications, my smallness of heart, my inability to see, and challenges me all over again to find a new way to speak something truthful to a hurting world. We shouldn't come to religious community to be told how to vote or to organize ourselves into massive blocks of people who believe the same things and act the same way in civil society. But we should come to have our consciences sharpened. We should come to goad our intellects and drive us forward along our personal paths of right action. Those who would dismiss religion entirely, naming it out of hand as a tool for injustice, forget that such religion is even possible. But it is possible. Here, and in places and pockets of faith from traditions all over the world, it is. Our congregation can shape us so that we can shape the world, can hold us up so that we can hold up movements, can strengthen us so that we can give subsistence to others. It is possible here. Let us be sharpened and goaded along our own separate paths. Let conscience, not unanimity, be our guide. And let religion, or at least this congregation, be a tool for personal transformation that in turn might bring change to the world. May it be so.